Hello, and welcome to yet another edition of Comfortably Unnumb, the official podcast of the Umbrella Society. My name is Blake Anderson, the host of this podcast, and the program's manager here at the Umbrella Society in beautiful Victoria, British Columbia, on the traditional unceded territories of the Algonquin-speaking peoples. So this is our first podcast of the new year. We took a break over the holidays and are now back with the second half of Season 3, and I'm incredibly excited about some of the guests that we have lined up for the latter half of this season. I have actually just been having a conversation about this podcast and how personal narrative really is so paramount when it comes to soliciting change to our decision makers in our community. Stories do matter, and this helps us remember the human element behind the key issues that put into context why our system needs to change. So to all the local politicians out there that are listening and those who have the ability to make an impact in our community, please take heed to these stories and help them influence the decisions that you make in the area of addiction, mental health, and homelessness. So, okay, I'm off my soapbox. Now I got to talk about our guest today. I am really happy to have Stephanie on our podcast today. We are blessed and grateful to be able to hire amazing individuals who have found long-term success in their recovery, who are now able to share their lived experience with those who Umbrella supports. And Stephanie is an unbelievable and compassionate individual working in our HOPS program. Stephanie has an amazing ability to connect with the individuals she supports, and she provides hope and connection to those who need it most. Stephanie's story is profound, as her challenges began at such an early age. I was thrilled that she had the courage to come onto the program and to share a story with us. Okay, Steph, thank you so much for taking the time. I know this is the end of a long, hard work week, but I appreciate you taking the time to come in.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I remember we've just started working together in the last little bit, and Steph's been with us, I think, for a little over 3 months. And
I felt 6 months almost.
6 months? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Time flies.
I know.
I guess I kind of came into the picture a few months ago, and I remember when we first connected, I realized this is, you've got a very unique and really inspiring recovery story. And as soon as you kind of started talking, I was like, oh, back in my head, I got to get you onto the podcast. So I appreciate you doing this. I know it's not easy, but it's great to have you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, definitely a little nervous, but I've done lots of therapy, and usually once I get talking, it's just easier. And
there you go. Right on. Yeah. And I guess, for me, what I found, quite unique about your story is just how young you were when, mental health and addiction challenges kind of came into your life.
Totally.
I'd love to kind of get that backstory and when did this journey start for you? Was this like really early on in kind of elementary school days, or did it come on fast and furious in your teens?
Yeah, I would say probably elementary school, like kind of when I started going to school and being more kind of social with and like around peers more.
You were born and raised in Victoria?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Born and raised here. I have an older brother. And my family is great. They're all like super kind, loving people. We all kind of struggle with anxiousness and, we all kind of have similar, struggles in mental health. My brother was kind of the first one in my family to really show signs of anxiety and depression and things like that.
How much older is your brother?
He's 3 years older.
Okay. Yeah. So you're kind of witnessing this from a younger age.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I wasn't, I was more like just kind of outgoing and not super anxious. And I only remember getting like starting to feel anxious and kind of insecure, once I started school, I would say. But I was very kind of aware of what anxiety was, meds, like my meds worked really well for my mom, which is great, but I was like put on meds really early, and I don't really know if that was the best call. I guess what I'm saying is like there wasn't as much like awareness around it back then, but it's been a big part of my life since I can remember, really. Yeah.
At what age were you put on medication for your anxiety?
I want to say like 12 or 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you first kind of started showing signs, and that was the first kind of solution
to you? Yeah. I was first diagnosed with OCD, actually. Okay. Because I had like weird kind of behaviors and like rituals that I would do and things around counting and that were pretty like that would kind of consume me and be like hard to deal with. So, but I think that was just more of a symptom of my anxiety, or like a manifestation of it, more so than OCD. But yeah, I got started on that pretty early, and didn't really go to therapy until later, which was when I was about 13. So that's when my eating disorder began.
You're in grade 8 at this point?
Grade 8, yeah.
That's a really challenging year anyways, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So. I really struggled in middle school. And yeah, I feel like it's challenging for everyone. And I was a bit on the chubbier side. Like looking back at photos, I wasn't nearly as big as I thought I was. Sure. But
your perception.
My body perception and self-image was definitely off. And so, yeah, I just felt really insecure about my body and stuff. And so I remember it kind of started like the summer after grade 8. I started going to the gym and I really liked it, and like started to notice that I was losing a bit of weight. And I just that power felt really good. And I was like, oh, I didn't know I could do this. Like, right. This is great. And it just made me feel really good.
So it started as a positive.
Totally. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it was like, and it was like encouraged, you know, in my family. And because, it was like, it started as a healthy thing. I got pretty just like quickly very obsessed with working out. And I also danced. So I would just like, I'd have to work out every day, and you know, I'd have dance every day. And
dance can be a serious one. It's like dance and figure skating. It's like a gymnastics. Those are the ones for me that are like push kids in early age to a kind of unrealistic means.
And it's very like comparative too. Like you're always just like standing in front of a mirror, you know, comparing bodies. And I think that definitely had a big impact on me for sure. And just the culture back then, this was like late 2000s, like 2009, 2010. And I just remember reading like magazines that were just about like how to lose 15 pounds, or like, like this has less calories, like just.
You were less kind of aware and conscious of the impact that can
have. Totally.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. So, and basically I just kept losing weight throughout grade 9. So by the time October, November rolled around, my parents like started to notice that I was pretty underweight. And so they like took me to the eating disorder center. I don't really know what it's called, but it's just on the Gorge.
Eating disorder clinic.
So I remember going there with my parents and being diagnosed and just like feeling really, I don't know, just feeling like I knew that something was wrong, but it was like a secret that I wanted to keep. And I felt really, you know, anxious that people knew about it. Like I didn't want help with it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have like now looking back, do you have any, you know, awareness of where that was coming from?
Oh, yes, for sure. Yeah, I think just wanting to keep control and knowing that, like, you know, my parents would, you know, see what I'm, like, actually eating and you know, I knew that the way I was thinking and acting wasn't, like, rational, and I knew that they would try to change that, but that just felt like the end of the world to
that
me.
That was terrifying.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. This was, like, kind of the only thing that was giving me, I think it was like a sense of control. I think that's kind of at the bottom of it. Then I went to, I just kind of did like weekly counseling sessions, and it was family therapy. So it was with my parents every time. And I don't have great memories from that clinic because they would like weigh me before every session, and I would just be so anxious, and like then like the plan for the next week would be based on how much I lost or gained that week. And if I lost weight, it would like my parents would have to up my my calories a bunch, and it caused so much strife in my house. Right. And I just felt so bad for like putting my parents through that, but also like mad at them for forcing me to do things that I didn't want to do. But yeah, so it was tough for a while.
And I think too, like, I think an eating disorder is a real challenging one. Like, I know, you know, from my experience with my sister, who went through something very similar, a few years older than you, but it was so foreign, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think as loved ones, you know, it's almost less tangible and maybe a little bit harder to know what the right thing to do is.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm sure that's hard to some person experiencing it, where you're like, here are my loved ones that might not be supporting the way that you needed, but it's no fault of theirs, just because it's such a different
they wanted to help so much, and you know, they just didn't know how. And I remember my brother came to one session and he said, like if I was told to eat more, like, I'd be so happy, like, I don't know why you don't just like eat more. And and I'm like, I would love to eat more. Like, it's not like I don't like food. Like, I would dream about food all the time and like, and crave it. And, but it was like, I'm just like, I just can't enjoy it. Like you guys can. Like, I just, it's just not allowed. And, it was just, and it's just not rational. And I was just like, no one's going to understand. And I don't want to change. Like, it's really strange. But yeah, it's different than like a substance that you can just go abstinent from too, because you still have to eat, you know, to survive.
Yeah, that's got to be the biggest kind of mind game with that, right?
Totally.
This is nutrients, but at the same time, you cutting down that was where the control kind of lay for you.
Totally. Yeah.
So how long were you doing the clinic for then?
I want to say under 6 months. It wasn't too long. Things were just kind of like, I took a few weeks off school and just to gain like a little bit of weight. And then I went back to school and I started to kind of start to be a bit more sneaky when I went back to school. Like, I would eat my lunch and I, would just, just hide food and just lie a lot. And I actually started wearing weights on my body appointments. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that went on for, I want to say, a month. And that is just crazy for me to think about.
Did you get away with that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was.
Going, great, you're doing it.
And I was, I was so like anxious about it and felt so guilty about it, but it was just like, I felt like I had no other choice because like I knew what weight they wanted me to get to. And I'm like, I feel like I'll die if they make me, or my mental state would be so just unbearable, like being that weight. Where was I? Yeah. So I was wearing weights and I just kind of added more and more to every session. And then after about a month, I think maybe the counselor started to like think something was up, or but they booked me for like a consultation at the BC Children's Hospital, just to kind of see like what kind of treatment I need going forward. And an actual doctor was going to look at me and stuff. And so that was when I got busted.
Oh, okay.
Was at the hospital.
Did you get busted with the weights on you? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I got down to the gown and everything and just put them aside. And I was just like, well, they're going to find out that.
Right.
And I just, and that was, one of the most, just one of the hardest things I've gone through. Like, just seeing my parents, like their disappointment and like worry. And so that was, and that's kind of when I realized like, okay, maybe like I am, maybe I do need some help, and maybe have a problem kind of thing. But still, I wasn't wanting to change, I don't think, at that point.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how kind of like some of the parallels drawn between, you know, something like an eating disorder and substance use addiction, yes. Right? You know,
yeah.
That is,
they're like super similar.
Personification, almost a relationship, right? That's built where
exactly.
Even if it's a toxic relationship, it's a relationship, right?
Yeah, and yeah.
Sometimes it's the hardest to break.
Totally, yeah. And I feel like I have done that with a few things throughout life, like, yeah, whether it's food or like relationships or substances, like, and most substances that I try, I have, you know, like a little, like I'm not great at like moderation, you know, sure. If I like something, right. I really like it.
Right.
And, it's tough to manage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're in the children's hospital. You've just been outed.
Yeah.
Maybe the first time where you're like, oh shit, maybe I actually, you know.
Yeah. And then
obviously you're not quite at that point, but what was the next steps for you then?
Yeah. So the next step was, I was going to go, into like outpatient treatment at the hospital. So, So I went home for a little bit and that was like a really dark period. I remember just my, like in the house, everyone was just very like on edge and I just felt so guilty. And, so me and my mom actually moved to Vancouver and like lived in a motel. I forget which one it was, but it was one of those I think it was maybe the Sandman or something.
Sure.
And exactly, right, yeah. On the highway.
Right.
Sure. But yeah, I went to this outpatient treatment center for girls with eating disorders. There was about like 10 of us, I think. I was 14 at this point, and I really enjoyed being there and connecting with the girls and doing activities. Like, I feel like I really, I really healed in that way and like got just, you know, just like resonating with other people and feeling like I'm not totally alone and crazy. And, So I was there for about 6 months and, basically you have all three meals there and two snacks and you like go to restaurants and, do outings and have like challenging things you do, like, you know, go for ice cream or, that was kind of the first time I thought about wanting to do this as a career. 'Cause I really connected with like the counselors and the nurses who were there and they just helped me so much. And I feel like, you know, if I do have this, you know, knowledge and ability to empathize with people going through this, like it'd be really cool if I could do that one day. Mm-hmm. So it helped me get to my desired weight and yeah, I definitely needed that like support and just kind of like institutionalization, I guess.
Sure, yeah. So you're putting life on hold to really tackle this big thing in your life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, it was hard to like leave school for 6 months too. And I actually switched schools when I went back just because I didn't want to like anyone to ask.
Right, yeah, no, you need just kind of the fresh start and new identity.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so when you did come back, so obviously this it kind of seems like a successful time or like a fair, you know, positive enough. Obviously, it's got to be super challenging, but it turned the corner a little bit.
It felt kind of weird because like people were, you know, proud that I, you know, was at my target weight, but I felt like I didn't change at all, like psychologically, really.
Okay.
You kind of
checked that off that box,
right?
At that point, but there was still something.
Yeah, for sure. There. I still like had that. Like just want to control. And I was like, I just remember being really excited to be in control of my meals again. And like, you know, even if it wasn't losing weight, just like working out again and not having restrictions on what I can do. And yeah, that was another one for me is like just having other people make my food for me was really triggering. I struggled for a really long time. Like it was just kind of always there, but like I managed it and I actually got really into like health and like wellness. Okay. And, I went like, vegan for a bit, and then I was raw vegan for a little bit. Oh, wow. Which that's wasn't very sustainable, but yeah. I was really into all that stuff, which was another kind of like fixation almost, but at least it was healthier than what I was doing before. But yeah, there were definitely periods where I would be not eating enough, overeating. Like sometimes I would I'd get into habits where I wouldn't eat all day, and then I'd binge eat at night, and just all these weird behaviors. Like I still definitely had an eating disorder, even though it wasn't anorexia. Like I didn't look anorexic, right. but yeah, I just kind of lived with it, and also didn't really necessarily still want to get better at that point.
Right. Okay. So you just, you feel like you were kind of treading water almost and kind of maintaining a weight, but not really healing in the way that you need to heal.
Yeah, exactly.
And as far as coming back to school, so you changed schools. Was that a traumatic time? Was that a time that was invigorating for you? Did it feel good to kind of get a fresh start?
Oof, not really, to be honest. Sure. I was struggling with I was just kind of trying to stay afloat and make friends. But I had a lot of problems with friends, and I definitely have social anxiety, which I realized later. I've just had a hard time. I just had two friendships, and they both just ended really dramatically. And then I had no friends. And so I kind of had to, I was just kind of felt on my own. But then by grade 12, well, I actually ended up going to my old school at grade 12 because I reconnected with one of my friends.
Okay.
I think about that so infrequently, I graduated and I was doing pretty well, I guess, mentally. I felt really excited to be out of high school.
Right, sure. Can I ask, were substances at all part of your life during your high school experience?
Not really, to be honest. I think because of my eating disorder, sure. I was like, that I don't was... want to, I don't want the empty calories, okay, and also to be out of control.
Right.
So it never, I did drink a few times and I was like, oh, this is really fun. But then I, the next day I would just feel okay, I need to control myself again. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, right. It just was not really, didn't really come up.
Right. Yeah. That kind of ties in with the friends thing. I never really had a big group of friends that partied and did that kind of thing. And right. I'm kind of grateful for that now. Cause I think if I was introduced to it earlier and it was part of my social group, I totally would have gotten into it earlier. But I didn't get into it until university, which was in 2014. I took a gap year and then I went to McGill, which was really just kind of random. But I just wanted to leave the island and go to a new city, and Montreal sounded really fun. Right. And, I didn't really know what I wanted to do for a career, but my family's already always been really pro, go to university. And, so I went and had a lot of fun. That's where my addiction started. And I was living in residence for the first year, and, there would just be parties all the time. There's just always someone to drink with.
The lifestyle is just right.
Yeah. And we'd go out Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, most weeks. And I lived with three other girls who are still my best friends, which was really fun. But also just we all just glorified it, and mm-hmm. and we're like, oh, this is so fun, we're so crazy. But it just escalated. And
would you say that you were kind of just on par with everybody's debauchery, or or was it kind of a little bit different? Were you kind of
had
a harder time turning it off, or was it, did you notice any kind of difference between you and you know, your friends that were out partying at the same time?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Cause they had been drinking like all through high school,
right.
Like, and I hadn't. So
this is this new experience for you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So the first few times I definitely took it. And this happened when I drank the few times in high school too. Like I would go from 0 to 100 and be like super fun and like loud and then I would just crash and like usually like black out a bit towards the end. And, I usually would just, yeah, I was kind of known as just like the person who would black out and like have to be like, not like walked home, but just like taking go home. Care of kind of, yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I felt like it, at first it felt so good to be able to feel like I could like fit in and like be social and like be myself, right. Also like I felt like kind of this like barrier, like alcohol just got rid of this barrier, right. I had for like being myself. And so yeah, like the first few drinks I just feel more like myself and more
that social anxiety is gone,
exactly.
The self-consciousness is kind of out the window,
exactly. And, right. Yeah, which
so
is
at first it feels like almost like a superpower, right?
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Right. And like such a relief, I right. think, for me too. Sure. Yeah. Like I'm like for the first time it's like there's just nothing in my brain except for like I'm having so much fun. And that was a very new experience for me. And yeah, so I like it definitely it escalated slowly. And my like friend group we just drank so much that like I didn't really notice. Like I would try to drink as much as they did, and like at first it didn't take nearly as much alcohol, but then like by like second and third year I was like drinking as much as they were and like kind of like surpassing them a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is hard when you are surrounded by it to really have it, you know, when everyone's kind of
yeah
hard, you don't have that measuring stick like, oh, this is like kind of, you know,
not normal
destructive behavior, this is not not totally healthy behavior when it's kind of normalized.
Yeah.
And then peer group. Yeah,
totally. Yeah. And I kind of thought like, oh, you know, this is just for 4 years, like this is what everybody does when they're in college, then
sure.
then I'll be normal after this. Gotcha. Kind of thing. And then like by fourth year, I think I started to get a little bit like aware that I might have an issue, but I didn't want to think of that at all.
Were you still able to kind of like go through with your schooling and stuff like that? Like was it impacting outside of, you know?
Yeah, I've kind of like scraped by a little bit, like, and I studied English, which I really liked. I definitely like used Spark Notes a lot and like did a lot of last minute essays and sure. like I wish that I sunk my teeth into more right. of it, but like I was also doing a lot of other stuff. And but yeah, no, I got through it. And I did, and also that was another thing is my roommates were very like studious too, like they like worked hard and played hard, so like they okay. would just like go to the library like after right. we would party, and I would just go with them. And so yeah, that kind of helped. We just were like living that lifestyle.
So you're making it work on the actual, like, you know, you're still achieving what you guys set out to achieve.
Right.
So,
yes.
So you're looking at this is a period of my life where this is what's going to be.
Right. As long right. as I do this, you know, it's fine. Yeah. I can do what I want. And, right. Yeah. And I started using like stimulants, for studying, which okay. was, yeah, that was just a slippery slope for me because, you know, I would sometimes do coke when I would go out, but it wasn't really my drug of choice. Like alcohol was more, but yeah, I got more into stimulants like through just like study drugs and yeah. And that just led me getting into like downers because I would feel too anxious to go to sleep. And so I was incorporating some of that and that, I don't know if I would have gotten through without that, but yeah.
So all of a sudden prescriptions are coming onto the picture along with alcohol.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's getting to a bit of into dangerous waters.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And then I remember like in fourth year, I would like start to hide alcohol in the freezer and like I would feel the need to drink every night, but like mm. we you know, some nights we wouldn't drink, like nights we didn't go out, we usually wouldn't drink. So, yeah, I would just kind of like hide it and was able to maintain that. And yeah, I graduated and that was fine. I did go on a spring break trip, with my friends, to like, to this, all-inclusive place in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And that was, kind of a wake up call a bit. Cause I just like my body felt like, I felt like I was going to die leaving. Right. And I realized that I'm just like, this social group isn't healthy. Like,
sure.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, but then I graduated in 2019. This was like, yeah, June 2019. And then COVID hit like right after that. I remember feeling like just really kind of scared for like real life to start after that, because, you know, I was thinking like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna go back to normal. But then once I got out like and started living life again, I realized, oh, I still want to drink every night.
Right. I think we always feel too at the end of something that like, okay, there's gonna be all this relief. I graduated, and you right. know that there's these hard finite, you know, there's this closure
that we
get and we turn one chapter and it's so right. much messier.
It's
than
almost
that.
Like I'm gonna be like a new person.
Right. Yeah. And then the reality is, oh, it's exactly the same. Still me. It's all messy and right and
totally.
Yeah, taking stuff right. Okay, so
yeah,
so you kind of finish, and that was kind of your agreement with yourself that this is just 4 years, but it wasn't just 4 years for you.
Yeah, totally. Right. Yeah, yeah. Then I went home, and I was working at a winery actually. Like I would work at a winery here on the island, in the summers. So that was like summer of second and third year, I think, which I think definitely escalated it too, because sure. That was also just like a environment where it was so normalized and even glamorized and
I've actually worked at a winery as well.
Oh yeah,
it's an occupational hazard for sure.
Totally. Yeah. 100%.
It's just there and it's right and like yeah. it's promoted right.
No, it was not the best. But yeah, I worked there for about 6 months, and then I was going to go traveling with my friend, which we did go traveling. We went to Vietnam for a month, and then we went to the Philippines, but then COVID was getting like really bad when, like, this was March. And yeah, so my plan, long story short, just kind of going back, I was just kind of like effing around for that year. Like I didn't know what I was going to do next. I just like decided to travel and, you know, work for a little bit and then travel. But then, yeah, that kind of got cut short because of COVID. So I came back and moved in with my parents and I was still just drinking every day. And like, even when I was traveling with my friend, like, you know, we would party, you know, some nights, but then, you know, other nights, like when we're just chilling at the hostel, like I would just have like a few drinks, and I could tell my friend was a bit like, you know, not maybe concerned, but just like noticed that I was drinking more.
That was just becoming reflexive at this point.
Totally. Yeah. And like the idea of not drinking one night was like not.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so then I moved in back with my parents and lockdown happened, and I would say like from then on is when like I started to really be like, okay, I have an issue, and like it would just like eat at me like all the time, but I would, you know, still drink every night. Like I would usually start around like 5, like, and then until I'm like passed out on the couch. Like
Were your parents aware of this? Were they calling you out? Was it like something you were just doing very discreetly?
Yeah, they also were drinking during that time, so it'd be normal to have like a few glasses of wine, but then I would just kind of keep drinking, and gotcha. They would like go to bed, but I was pretty good at being discreet about it, and I started just like only want to drink alone and stuff like that. But there were, like, as time went on, there were a few times where my mom tried to talk to me about it, once when I wasn't sober, which I don't remember. And then once when I was sober, which I was like, I was just like, nope, I'm not talking about this. Like I was so I just like rejected it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, and at that point, like, was it kind of crossing your mind, but you just didn't want to look at it, or were you just kind of like,
oh, yeah,
I like this and this is working for me?
No, it was crossing my mind, and I'm like, I know I'm going to have to do something about this at some point, but I feel like I can't, like, I'm not like mentally capable of not drinking. Like, I don't know. It just felt like stopping drinking was like not an option. Like I couldn't survive without it. Right. I was just kind of, really struggling with that inside, and I would just have more and more like bad nights, like, and after like about 6 months of living with my parents, I moved to Vancouver with my friend Emma, a different friend, and so we lived together, and she likes to drink too, so you know, drinking was fine there. And then the next few years, it just kind of progressed, and I started to care less and less about my health, which was kind of like the breaking point for me, I think. Like when I started to feel like sick and like I'm really hurting my body, and like I wasn't craving like healthy foods or even like water, then I was always like dehydrated. It just got to a point where like none of it was fun anymore.
Sure, right.
But I still felt like I couldn't stop.
It's a scary place.
Yeah, it is really scary. But I also kind of, I think like having the eating disorder experience kind of helped, because like I've also been there with my eating disorder, where I thought like I will never like feel okay again, you know, like this is
your life. This is your experience.
Right. Yeah. This is never going to go away. But like it did go away. Like it still was there a little bit, but like
you kind of overcame the worst of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that like feeling and obsession did go away. Maybe just got transferred over to something else, but I think I had a bit more like deep down. I probably knew I could do something about it, but I think I was just like I just don't even want to. Like I was so kind of just like depressed and like had such low self-esteem that I just didn't really, and I was just so anxious about life and like my career, what I'm gonna do, and just lots of like existential crises with just like my age and the time of like the world. But actually the first time that I like said out loud that I think I have a problem was when I did psychedelics with a few people, and I was having kind of a bad time, and I said it, and I didn't know that I said it, but then my friend told me after. She was like, you said that you think you have a drinking problem. And I was like, holy shit, like like secrets out.
Right.
And yeah, so that was kind of the first time I thought about facing it or doing something about it, but mostly I just felt like shit, like now I can't drink with my roommate anymore, like like normally.
Once you say that, it's hard putting
exactly
putting the toothpaste back in.
I think that's also why I just didn't want to even utter it, because that made it
real.
Yeah.
So it kind of changed your, obviously. Yeah. It's like that shift is happening, but I always think that's, I like how you said that, where you knew you need to make the change, but you're kind of too depressed, or at the time, when you didn't have that desire enough to, I think that's what so many people don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, just thought, well, that desire needs to be there. It's that X factor. Right?
Totally. Yeah.
You know, and you don't know when that is. So at least you're at the point where you're acknowledging it, you know, it sounds like it kind of slipped out, but at the same time, one way or the other, it's starting to become an outward thing and not just something you're keeping to yourself.
Totally.
So that's got to be a real shift.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. That was definitely a huge shift. And I just kind of, I think I just realized like the weight of it, and like, and kind of like, if I don't do something about it now, then when will I sort of, right. And then, but yeah, but then of time went on, like a few months went by and I was still drinking. But, and then I was actually, I was going to be a bridesmaid at my manager's wedding who worked at the winery. Like we were pretty close and she asked me to be her bridesmaid and it was all fine. But, basically we just had a big argument like the night before her wedding and it was just over. I won't go into that, but, but I ended up like my mom had to pick me up and I was like, just like completely blackout and just like, and she asked me, she was like, Steph, do you want help? And I was like, yeah. Okay. And then I didn't end up going to the wedding and that was like really, that was just like the last kind of straw for me in terms of like shame and embarrassment. Right, yeah. Cause like, it's not like, that's like, it wasn't, you know, it's not like I made a scene at the wedding or anything, but like I really just fucked that up. And the whole reason was alcohol. Like right. All my anger came out when I started drinking because gotcha. Yeah. And that's a huge reason. I think I like to drink too, is cause it allows me to express my emotions, right. Like
sure.
Sadness, anger, even happiness.
Right.
Like
so that repression is like all of a sudden, right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's now out of your control, which is also scary. And, exactly. And I guess too, now this is starting to impact relationships.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Which is yeah. A big and that,
yeah.
Yeah. And I've started to think like, yeah, I really value like relationships and friendships. And I really care about like how people think of me. And yeah, so that paired with like just my physical health, like getting worse, I just felt like, yeah, I'm ready to just kind of give up on trying to continue this. And yeah, so I told my mom that. I don't have any memory of that, but she like woke me up in the morning and told me what I said, and I just kind of was like, yeah, like okay. I want help. And she actually, and then she called Edgewood that day because she just like looked at treatment centers that were near us. And I did like an intake call and
that day.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah. It was like, okay, you said you want to do something. And
she was like, okay, we're booking you right now. Right. And which I'm so thankful for, like okay. That is, I know that's not a common scenario.
Well, I think like, it kind of sheds light on, you know, the issues that we have. And yeah. I said, hey, it's amazing when we have what a difference that makes when you can say, I want help.
And you had
that ability to get that.
Yeah.
And it just breaks my heart that more people don't have that ability or not everybody. There's not equity there.
Exactly. Right? Where, yeah.
Because that gap, imagine if you had to wait that time, you could have talked yourself right out of it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, for your situation, this is amazing. You said you wanted help and you were talking to somebody that day.
Yeah.
That's got to be pretty empowering.
Totally. Sure. Totally.
Scary too, but empowering at the same time.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Honestly, like I thought it would be way scarier than it was. Like I mostly just felt so much relief because I realized like how much misery it was causing me. And I really don't like being controlled by anything. And like at that point it was just controlling me and not
steering the ship.
Yeah. And I wasn't able, like I just, yeah, I felt like, yeah, just kind of like a blank slate. Like I'm just, yeah, I, what did they say? In treatment, like powerlessness and giving up control, like totally giving up control was like really hard for me, but also like really needed and healing. Right. And yeah, so I went to Edgewood like a week after, like it wasn't too long. And yeah, I was just like ready. I was so ready. And yeah, I was also just like, you know, not feeling the best. Like I was embarrassed and just kind of like, this is crazy. I'm scared, but also like, I'm more scared to continue the way I was going. It's right. Kind of just like picking which scary better.
Right.
And yeah, so I went to Edgewood for 50 days and it was such a good experience. I feel like like just being in a environment where other people were going through through the same thing, and you know, there was no shame. It was just all vulnerable people can, like, we're all in the same boat. And so yeah, I felt like I was just able to like be myself right away. And yeah, I definitely like went through a lot of like roller coaster of emotions that I just like, it really surprised me like how emotional I was when I stopped drinking. Like it was really numbing me out, obviously. And and all of these like, yeah, just new things came up.
They always say, I love the expression of the window of tolerance, that, you know, when you're under the influence, you have this false window of tolerance. So you feel like you can tolerate everything when you're under the influence. And then when you take that away, your tolerance level is nothing. It's, you know, so any little bump in the road, it's going to knock you out.
Yeah, I've never really heard of that before. Right? That's so true though.
So
yeah.
That's why people, you know, say I'm so raw, you know, feeling so raw. Tolerance level has gone right down to nothing. So any little bump is going to get you out of that kind of comfort zone.
Right? Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. Yeah. So yeah. And you're going into it right, fresh, like not that grace period. You're like,
yeah, totally. Yeah. It was just like, yeah, and I had never been to an AA meeting or anything, but like, yeah, most people there were like familiar with AA and we'd have AA meetings and stuff. And yeah, it was just great. Like I think that treatment like was really the most, like, I don't know if I would have gotten and stayed sober if it were just like, you know, working with an outreach worker, or just getting counseling or something. Like I needed to be like immersed and, cause I'm always looking for a way out or like a way around things. Yeah. And, so just to give up control and really dedicate the time to just working on myself. And if anything, like I socialized too much. Like I just loved like it was just such a fun group of people, and I had a lot of fun, like, which is funny, but yeah. And you also just bond with people so much in treatment too.
It's that connection piece that a lot of times we're lacking.
So I got a lot of that good connection, but yeah, I definitely, like, it's hard for me to look in words a lot of the time. And so I did a lot of that there, but it was, it was a struggle just like with that balance of, of like, and I get FOMO too. Like I'm really like socially pressured, and which but I'm also very introverted and like need my alone time. So it's, it's hard to balance.
That's dichotomy. So this experience, obviously, like a bit of a game changer. And I always say that about treatment. I think whenever anyone's kind of like, oh, I just need a little bit. I just need to take, you know, do some more meetings. And I'm always like, are you sure not, you know, treatment? Like I feel it's something that almost everybody actually should experience, you know, imagine being able to, I think everybody needs that, some time to dedicate towards themselves and and look inward and figure out who you are and what you're doing here and finding that
and peace. And like explore different healing options. Like I started smudging when I was there, and like I got back into yoga, which like I've practices that like will replace your substance and also just like, seeing good, like just being around people who have the same mission and like same goal. Like, cause I feel like, if I went to a meeting, I would just come out and be with my friends who want to drink. And, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh yeah, fuck AA, you know,
so and that full immersion with people that are all doing the same, walking the same walk as you.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's really hard to like focus on yourself, like when you're just living life, like with, especially, when you, working and have responsibilities and relationships, it's kind of impossible to take care of yourself, let alone like heal your inner wounds and stuff. So yeah, I totally agree. I think I would make treatment like free for everyone if I could,
So, you know, so you have this great experience. What was the transition like back into, because, you know, I think this is a big struggle for a lot of people, because, you know, you're in this bubble and you're being able to work on yourself. Then you come out so empowered, and then kind of life hits you back in the face a little bit again, right?
Yeah.
And all the problems that were there when you left are still waiting for you. And
100%.
You know, even if you're stronger, it can be a jarring kind of transition. How was it for you?
Yeah, it was super jarring. Yeah, like, and it, I feel like you get such a warped sense of time when you're in there too, because, you know, it's only 50 days, which like doesn't sound like much, but when you're in there, like you do so many things, right, and like go through so many like time breakthroughs that, and you feel, but then like other people are just like, oh, you're back, you know, like, right. You're like, right. No, I was on a journey. Like, but yeah, so I kind of struggled. Me and my counselor had a bit of a disagreement about whether I should go to a sober house or not. Like I was really being encouraged to go to one, but I just like, I, that was just one thing where I wanted my control back in that sense, or like I wanted to be in my apartment, like where there's not other people in right. my space. And it was also just, yeah, like a control thing. And, I think it probably would have been beneficial for me to go, like if I just kind of, yeah. But also I felt like I needed to do what I wanted to do. And I did feel really strong at that point. Like I had a aftercare plan and like, I really wanted to stay sober. But I was definitely really scared, because they tell you just all the time, like it's, you know, even though you want to stay sober, like, you know, you're going to get that urge and that thought and, you know, relapse is just so common. And, so yeah, I was just terrified I would relapse. And I think that kind of just like that fear has been kind of the thing that's kept me sober, to be honest. Like the fear of like just going back to that just depressed, shameful, low self-esteem state. Like that's right. what I associate drinking with now.
Right. So you have a good ability to kind of play the tape forward.
Exactly.
Where you don't get caught up in the romanticism of the substances.
Totally. And
the positive side, you're like, no, I remember the, which is great. Right. That's a gift. Yeah.
Yeah.
To have that.
Yeah.
So when you came out, I mean, obviously there's some challenges, but sobriety wise, you stayed.
Yeah. Yeah. I tried to go to AA meetings. I went to a few. I like meetings and hearing stories and connecting with people, but like the format of the AA meetings just never really, I don't know. And I found it's hard to find a group that really works for you. And I was living in Vancouver at the time, which, like every meeting that I went to had like a podium that people would have to go and talk at the podium. And I really didn't like that, but I had many excuses for not going to AA. Yeah. but I just kind of like, I definitely isolated a lot, just cause I felt like I couldn't really be social without alcohol still. But I did so much like I found joy in things again that I didn't before, like drawing and like reading, listening to podcasts, like being outdoors. Like I had this like newfound appreciation for the world. And I think that like spiritual element really helped with that too. Right. I just felt like, yeah, I just kind of managed and definitely didn't get as much support as I probably should have. But I just kind of felt like, oh, I need to go back to work. I need to, you know, be like productive again and just go right back into real life. But if I could give advice to people, it'd definitely be to like take your time when you come out of treatment. And, you know, if you can go to a sober house or like some sort of second stage living, I think that's super important. It's you just need that support. And I think I managed because I just from like isolating, and I also had really good friends from treatment that I would call all the time.
Right. So you kind of figured out a program that worked for you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I found,
it was the easiest route, but it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, I haven't drank since then, which is just over 3 years ago.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's, and for me, like I said, it's another good testament to, you know, this isn't a one size fits all model, right? You know, so obviously you leaned in to your passions and kind of, you know, found an alternative approach to kind of to getting that, right?
Yeah. And I still definitely struggle with with, you know, certain things. Like I smoke and vape, which I know I'm going to have to deal with down the line one day. But it's like, for me, I look at it as like a, like, it, is it making my life unmanageable? Right. Or, you know, is it, you know, affecting my health? And as long as it's, you know, not, yeah, like negatively impacting my life in a big way, then I let myself have little treats because, right. you know, we all need that too.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think there's always that balance, right? You know, and
yeah balance is key.
And it seems like, you know, hey, if you're looking at where your life was at over 3 years ago to where mm-hmm. it's at now, it's a completely, different place.
Yeah, totally.
So when, you know, obviously you're in Vancouver at this point, when you get out, mm-hmm. What, for one, made you make the shift to come back to Victoria, but mm-hmm. also, you know, when did you get that impetus to start working in the field and do, what was the inspiration behind that?
So I kind of like decided that I wanted to work in the field, I think, when I was in treatment, because I really loved not like counseling people, but we do this thing where like anytime we had to, you know, do like a journaling thing, we'd have to like read it to our peers and get feedback. And I really liked giving feedback and just like talking about feelings and just like being in an environment like that, I just loved. So I thought I like down the line at some point I want to get into counseling or something like that. Yeah, so for a bit I was working at a restaurant, and then I was working as a dog walker. Well, I started working as a dog walker when I started doing my diploma online for addictions. And because I tried to like look to see if I could get jobs as like as a support worker in places in Vancouver, but all of them said you need like either experience or this course. So yeah, I did that course and was like dog walking on Rover, and I was living at Kitts Beach, which was really nice. It was a fun time. And then I decided to move back here because someone actually bought my apartment, and so I had to move, and I've been thinking about moving back for a while, and like my family's here, and my heart is in Victoria, I would say. So yeah, I moved back here in May and got my first job at the Youth Empowerment Society, like in this field. But I was just casual there. And then this job came. And so, yeah, it's kind of my first like full-time job in this field. And it's been, very new, but I feel like I'm really glad that I'm starting where I am, like working with clients and in housing, and just having a lot of time getting to talk to people and hear their stories and get to know all the different types of people we encounter. And my plan is still to get my counseling certification, but yeah, I love what I do now, so I'm just kind of taking it day by day.
Yeah, I know. And it looks like you really lean into that relational piece, and mm-hmm. yeah, I think that, you know,
yeah,
obviously that like, the relatability is so important in our line of work. And
yes,
so that's great. And I think, you know, yeah, it seems like you're, I was just struck right away by how, for one, you're a very genuine person, mm-hmm. and that I think goes a long way in this field, but also, just how eager you are to kind of like learn, you know, the ins and outs of the field as well. Mm-hmm. And that I think is so important as well. So
totally. Yeah. There's so much to learn and explore. And yeah, I feel like we're trying so many things, but like none of us really know what we're doing. But the best way to figure out the best way forward is to just talk and collaborate. And yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think too, I think, anybody who acts as if they know what they're doing in this line of work in the human field,
yeah,
I don't trust them.
No, so true. Yeah,
it's so different, right? And I feel that everybody is such a unique and individual process with every single person that you deal with, right? And
totally.
So it's I think having that kind of not knowing stance is so important.
Yeah.
Because like I said, everybody has such a unique story.
Yeah. Exactly.
My question for you before we end is, like, I mean, yeah, such a powerful story. And I think too, just, you know, struggles going through your youth. That's a, you know, that's a really, really challenging one. It seems like going through such a big process with your eating disorder, and then having to face another, you know, addiction, like, you know, just a few years later. That's really something to persevere, not just one challenge, but two gigantic challenges, right?
Yeah.
That can take, you know, the best people out, right? So
I think
that takes a lot of strength. If you know, you're talking, especially, you know, I always feel that, you know, we're really looking at that in early intervention and supporting, you know, we're starting up, you know, these initiatives in the schools, where we're really trying to talk to youth about, you know, substance use and reaching out for help. You know, if, you know, there's someone in a similar position that you were in, you know, back in the day, you know, what advice would you give them? I know this is a big question.
I
don't want to put you on the spot.
That's a tough question. Cause I was just like there's so many lessons that I feel like I've learned over the past few years where I've been like, oh, like someone told me that years ago. And I was just like, oh yeah, whatever. But like, but then like once you experience it, you're like, oh yeah, that's so true. Like they were right. Like I shouldn't have worried about that or this, whatever. Right. So yeah, it's hard to give younger people advice, I feel like. But I think like asking for help is, I think, the best advice I could give, because I was terrified to ask for help, like, and there's no reason to be. Like, people want to help and are happy to help, and yeah, if you, it just makes it way more manageable when you ask for help. And and what else, just try to work on like self-compassion and not worry about other people's feelings. Sure. I feel like this is more like I feel like for people who were anxious and like really sensitive and socially anxious like me, like you're always anxious about everyone else and you like don't worry about yourself. So just like take a sec and worry about yourself, and because that's all that's going to be there at the end of the day, and it's going to stick with you. And don't be so hard on yourself.
Amazing. Cool. Well, listen, I'm absolutely thrilled and really honored to have you on.
Yeah, thank you so much. Like it's said, been great.
I was really hoping that you would say yes. I know this is not easy to come on and talk about such a, you know, an intimate story, but I that really was powerful for me to listen to. I know that it's going to make a lot of impact on everybody who listens. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Yeah, that was great. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Okay. Thanks again to Stephanie for coming in to share such an inspirational story. I feel that is so powerful to hear about mental health and addiction challenges through the perspective of a youth. We haven't had that on this podcast before, so that was new for us. And I think that it takes such a very resilient and brave individual to be able to tackle the challenges that Stephanie faced at such a young age. And now, as an adult, to be able to come back and share her story with such eloquence and cohesiveness, I'm truly impressed. So thank you again. And I know that I was saying this at the beginning of this episode, but I'm going to say it again. These stories of recovery are so important to share. I was speaking about the impact these stories have on decision makers in our community. Hopefully. But more importantly, we hear time and time again that these stories are such a source of inspiration for those at the beginning of their recovery journey, as well as their loved ones. I was actually just speaking with someone today who is in their first month of recovery, and they were so inspired by the stories of the incredible folks on our podcast that it gave them the courage to walk through the doors and seek the help that they needed and deserved. This is absolutely heartwarming for me and motivates me to keep on coming out with these stories and these podcasts. So if you are someone who is listening, who is in early recovery or on that precipice of making a change, please know that you're not alone. You have the help and support from us here at Umbrella, as well as the wonderful recovery community around you. Recovery is possible. These podcasts highlight that time and time again. It does take courage, commitment, hard work, and support, but please remind yourself often that you can do this. If you are a loved one listening, please keep hope. You never know when that impetus for change will take hold. The road might have pitfalls and setbacks, but sticking with it will eventually lead to a brighter future. Okay, that is it for me. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with a very special episode. Until then, stay safe and please help spread the word of recovery. From the Umbrella Society, I'm Blake Anderson.